It's about trust. All this influencer stuff is just basically word of mouth. Instead of one person talking to five of their friends, it's one person talking to 50,000 of their fans. It's the same underlying concept. With influencer, your goal should be to build a trusted community, a community that consumers in your market trust. For some of our largest brands, hundreds of influencers post about them week on week, almost on a daily basis. They're getting 50-60 pieces of content. It's almost like you're on every billboard in your city. Feels like you're everywhere, although you're not everywhere. You're just in that one subgroup of people who are talking about you, but it feels like you're everywhere for people who are part of that community. That's one of the best outcomes of influencer marketing, is if you can build a micro community of people who are talking about you consistently on a week-on-week basis, you've won at influencer marketing.
Yash, I'm super excited to talk about the state of influencer marketing with you. Why don't you tell me why you built Sorrel?
Excited to be on your show. Have been listening to it for probably years now. Really cool to be on. So why we built Sorrel? I was running an influencer agency before this, where we worked with brands and we helped them manage creators and we built their creator communities for them. And then during that process, we found that we did it really well. So we've scaled communities to, 50, 100, 500, even thousands of influencers in some cases. But it was all a very clunky process. It was all managed in spreadsheets, in Trello boards, using Zapier automations in the back end, very manual. I was working 16-hour days, not efficient, hard to train the team and so on. So we wanted for something that's easy to use, that I can train my team on easily and not worry about it, right? It abstracts away, something that abstracts away all of the manual boring bits of doing influencer marketing. We looked at some software in the market. They were all expensive and clunky. So we decided to build something of our own that solved our own problem. And turns out a lot of other brands need it. So we've stopped doing the agency now and we're fully focused on building Sorrel as the simplest influencer marketing tool that exists.
When I do this podcast, it's like themes happen all around me. And I've been talking to other brand owners recently about the state of influencer marketing. And it's been a perpetually changing beast, I feel like, to some extent. Describe your philosophy of influencer marketing in 2024 and what that looks like.
It is an ever-changing beast for sure. If I think back maybe even 3-5 years ago, a lot of the nature was very transactional. So it was very, hey, I'm going to, almost like buying an ad, right? It's like, I'm going to pay you a certain amount and then you're going to post about us these many times, just like how you would pay Facebook a certain amount and they're going to show your ad a certain number of times, right? It was that initially. And some of that still lingers on, but it's not very authentic when brands do it. Customers can see through it when an influencer is just posting about you for money. So what's trending now, or what I think is here to stay, is authentic content that influencers share about products they actually truly use, and not something that they're just talking about because they got paid for it. So I think my philosophy, to answer your question, my philosophy on influencer marketing is very what I call relationship first. So you have to first build the relationship with the creator, see if they actually like using your product in their day-to-day, and then think, obviously you can pay someone for their work. That's not an issue. Payment is not an issue. You're compensating someone fairly. That's fine. But if they don't actually use your product in the day-to-day, then that's a red flag. So I think building that relationship and having that almost like a friendship with influencers, and building that community of people who are just constantly talking about you. It's no longer about, a couple of large influencers with millions of followers talking about you once a month. It is 50 nano influencers constantly talking about your products week on week. And I think those types of collaborations are what's working right now.
It was just Hexclad, actually. I was just talking with the director of growth at Hexclad, and they went from a strategy of having multiple big influencers to just having one main influencer, and that's Gordon Ramsay. They kind of built him in. I think he's an equity partner in Hexclad, actually. And so he's like fully built into the brand. And then instead of all those mid-tier ones, they've gone to a full product seeding strategy. And for a brand like that, where the product is so good, I'm one of their influencers because they sent me a pan. Even if they're not making content about it, it's going to be part of their cooking content every time they make it as well. So it's building like that long-term relationship because the product's so good.
Especially when the brands can position their product as a way for the influencer to create, because fundamentally influencers are creators. You want to create great content. So if you can somehow position your product as a way for them to get great content out of, then you have nothing to worry about. So I think that's also something to think about when you approach influencers is how can we pitch this in a way where, yes, they can make money off of commissions or they get the free product and that has its own value or we would pay them. But how? What do they truly want? They truly want to, you know, go viral, get millions of views on their reels and so on. How can we potentially allow for that using our product? So thinking about that and mentioning that even in your outreach scripts and templates to influencers would is definitely helpful.
So you're working with hundreds of brands on their product seeding, on their nano influencer campaigns. How do you describe, I know there's no one playbook, but I think there's a lot of maybe, there's a whole range of brands that listen to this podcast, but maybe for the brands who are starting out or who are getting into the space, what do you recommend as the sort of the strategy for how they do that?
Great question. And I see the pyramid behind you and I like to call my, coincidentally, I like to call my influencer strategy a pyramid model or the Illuminati strategy of influencers. So I'll answer this question in three phases because there are three phases to the pyramid and brands across different stages. If it's an early stage brand, they can just get away with building the base of the pyramid for now. As you scale and if you're already a brand that is at a certain scale, you can keep layering on layers of the pyramid that will help you build like a what I call a full stack influencer program. So first things first, always build your base, like I said, with a relationship first frame in mind, which in the best way to build relationships is product seeding. So you start by gifting or seeding products to influencers by sending them free product. Basically what that means is you send them free product, you don't necessarily have any expectations, but it does definitely help to mention things like, hey, if you like the product, we would love working with you. There is a lot of these approaches where there is brands tend to say no commitment or we don't expect anything in return from you when they do seeding. That sometimes we are seeing that it's tending to backfire now because influencers know that you're sending them free product because you want something out of them. You want them to post about you. You want the sales out of them. So saying things like, we don't really expect anything in return. I just want to send you a free product is a little bit disingenuous. So don't do that. Just say something like, hey, we want to send you a free product and potentially explore a collaboration in the future if it works out, if you like our product.
You set the expectation a little bit that that's what you're actually after up front.
100%. Yeah, setting the expectation helps because what happens is brands would send this, you know, no strings attached type of seeding approach. They would send outreach saying that. And then when the influencer receives product, 2 weeks later, you're following up with them saying, hey, do you want to post about it? Right. But then, hey, 2 weeks earlier, you said that you don't actually need expect anything from me. This was no strings attached. So it creates that incongruence, which isn't the best way to start off a relationship, in my opinion. So you should just be upfront about it. Influencers know why you're reaching out to them. So it's just clear that, hey, this is why I'm reaching out. So you do that, you build your base of seeding, right? So you start seeding products. Some of those who like your product will post about you. What's next? That's where that second layer of your pyramid, and this is a great strategy, right? You can continue seeding, people will post about you, and you're going to see some incremental revenue. But your goal, like I said, should not be to just start the relationships and end them, right? Your goal should be to make them long-term, to incentivize them to post over and over and over again. So what I suggest brands do is they would take the influencers that are in the base of the pyramid that have posted and you reward good behavior. So whoever posts gets added to your ambassador program. And the ambassador program is one layer deeper, right? It's more engaged. It's the next step. It's the next level in your relationship with them. Basically, what you do is you would send them ideally free products every month. You would have some sort of an affiliate. Usually brands tend to conflate or confuse ambassador and affiliate. And those are two different things. Affiliate is basically a payout structure, is how you pay someone. That's like a compensation model. It's like commissions. That's affiliate. Affiliate is part of ambassador, but it's more than that, right? So your second layer of ambassador will have the affiliate payout. It would have, say, monthly or recurring free product, and it would have some sort of special perk or a benefit that only you can offer them that nobody else can. Because again, this is a crowded market. Influencers are getting outreached to every single day. So you want to make sure that your brand is offering them something that is valuable. For example, one of our brands is like a cookie brand, and they come up with a cookie of the month flavor, like an experimental flavor every single month. So what they do, and this is why it's so genius, is they would send their perk to influencers is they would just send the cookie of the month 1 week in advance before it launches publicly. What this does is it helps the, it makes the influencer feel special because, hey, I'm getting the cookie of the month before anybody else gets the cookie of the month. By virtue of that, they actually post about the cookie of the month, which gets them more, which gets the brand more sales when the cookie of the month actually comes, goes live. So very interesting way to do it. So come up with a perk that only you can offer to the creators. And some of our brands, let's say it can be a bonus, like our fitness, one of our fitness brands would pay the 1 year gym membership if you make a certain number of sales, right? So things that only you can offer that are very, very unique, add them to your ambassador program. It also incentivizes creators to work harder to deliver for you. So they get those rewards and they keep those rewards. So that's your ambassador layer. So you're, so far we have two layers, right? We are seeding, we're qualifying the people who are posting. The people who post get a higher affiliate percentage. They get all of these special bonuses. They get recurring free product and so on. From here, what do you do? At this point, you have a community of people that are constantly posting about you, right? Over time, over 2, 3, 6 months, you will see that of all of these, let's say 100 people in your ambassador program, you have your top 10, your top 20 people who consistently just perform. They make great content, or they drive a lot of revenue, or their audience really loves you. These are your true partners, just like we mentioned Gordon Ramsay for Hexclad. That's obviously a celebrity, that's in celebrity arena, but you would have micro versions of that for your brand. You need to identify those partners and incentivize them even further and have more special deals at the tip of the pyramid. There's just no real structure here. So you could do traditional paid, where if you just know that whenever this person posts, they just get a sales, just get them on a retainer, almost bring them on your payroll and say, hey, we're going to pay you $1,500 a month if you're going to post, you know, 3 reels and 2 YouTube videos, something like that, right? You make a more traditional deal like that. That's one way to do it. Creator equity is another way to do it. A higher, way higher, like a 50% affiliate commission is another way to make them feel as almost as a partner in the business than, you know, just like an ambassador or an affiliate. So do more of these like custom tailor-made white glove deals with creators at the tip of your pyramid. So this system overall is really good. And what we are seeing some of our biggest brands do is because you almost have a qualifier at every step, so you don't lose out much. Your downside is limited. What happens is brands tend to test influencer and they do the tip of the pyramid first. They would start paying influencers. They would give a high affiliate percentage. And if it doesn't work because there's no proof of work, they end up quitting the channel altogether. So you test with the lowest risk way possible, which is product seeding. Then you elevate influencers into an ambassador program, the ones who qualify, the ones who post, and the ones who consistently keep posting and consistently drive results, you do more, even deeper long-term collaborations with them at the tip of the pyramid. So this is the kind of structure that I recommend brands follow with their modern influencer programs.
First of all, we don't get to mention the Illuminati enough on the D2C podcast, so thank you for bringing it up.
Yeah,
and I just it makes perfect sense just because it's like it's a funnel, right? So if you were to start in the middle or the top of the pyramid, you'd be feeding it with the wrong kind of people. You'd be feeding it with people who are pay to play rather than who have an organic connection to the brand. So you feed that lower the base of the pyramid with all these people that want to organically use your product. In terms of that layer, I guess again it's going to vary per brand, but what are you looking for in terms of products seeded to pieces of content or pieces of influencer marketing that kind of come out of that? What are you aiming for a conversion percentage on that base tier?
Usually, again, it really varies per brand. A good benchmark is at least 30%. Otherwise, you're doing too much for too little. And we can usually get to 30%. Some brands, I mean, you can obviously manually follow up. In Sarel, there are automations that you can set up. So when you can ship a product through Sarel, so when a product is delivered, Sarel would automatically trigger a reminder message to them saying, hey, what do you think of the product? So all of that is automated. But if you're not using a software such as ours, you can obviously follow up with them to make sure, definitely follow up. Worst case, you get feedback on the product. And best case, you remind them to post and they actually end up posting. So 30% is a good benchmark. If you're any lower than 30%, if you're sending 100 products out and you're getting less than 30 people post, there is some problems that you can fix and tweak and start bringing it up to 30%. We've seen as high as 70% for some brands that are really good, they're really quirky. They get a lot of posts, especially if everything is aligned, if they have the right ambassador program in place, which is the second tier. So influencers just know that, hey, if I post, I get the commissions. So why don't I just go ahead and post about it? So that's one thing you could do. Another thing to do is to actually just remind them to post, which is surprisingly influencers get a lot of product. So just simply sending a reminder or setting up an automation via software like ours would help you increase that post rate. So we see anywhere between 30 to 70%, but 30% is a good benchmark to hit as a brand who's just starting out.
It's such a good time for this strategy too. I remember talking with Oliver from Tabs Chocolate, who I know is or has been a client of you guys.
They do
and
use
I remember
us, yes.
His strategy talking about basically like giving or creating affiliate channels on TikTok. So it's not just, you're not just an affiliate with your YouTube channel. You basically have this whole TikTok that it would be like Johnny's Tabs Shop or whatever, yeah. Right? And they basically have all these affiliates taking advantage of that ability to get organic traffic, especially for a product that has a viral component like a Tabs sex chocolate.
For sure.
And I could see that working really, really well where people can enter that base. It can really fill that base of the pyramid with a lot of organic traffic that they can get on these platforms.
I agree with that. If your product is similar to that, Tabs is a very viral product. That was the product that I was thinking of when I was earlier in the podcast, when I said, if your product is giving a good reason for influencers to post about you, like it's quirky content, it's very fun content, sneaky content, because it's sex chocolate, you know, people want to post about these things. It works when you're Tabs. We haven't necessarily seen that same strategy work for some other brands who've tried it. Because again, fundamentally, it's about trust, right? Influencer is basically like, all this influencer stuff is just modern, you know, it's all modern terms, but it's basically word of mouth. It's basically, instead of one person talking to five people, five of their friends, it's one person talking to 50,000 of their fans. It's the same underlying concept. And the thing that's a first principle underlying word of mouth is trust. Word of mouth you won't trust somebody's word if you didn't trust them. So their word of mouth doesn't mean anything. So with influencer, your goal should be to build a trusted community, a community that consumers in your market trust. So doing that approach that Tabs has worked out really well for them, because it's the product just lends itself to that virality organically on TikTok. But if you're, you know, the other 90% of product categories that don't necessarily lend themselves to that, you're way better off just aligning with true influencers that have influence over your customers than doing that viral growth type of approach on TikTok. But again, if you are a product like Tabs is, then that definitely helps. So I think it's important to be cognizant of that difference. Yeah.
You want to leverage the person's profile, but not their fake profile they've made for a brand, because that's going to work better for most brands. That makes sense.
Correct.
And then just give some brass tacks when it comes to the people that you're starting with to build your base. We say nano influencers. What do we mean in 2024 by nano influencers in terms of followers?
Different people put it differently. I usually put it at, if somebody has anywhere between 3 to 20,000 followers, 20-25 even, that's what I would call a nano influencer. They're not too huge to, you know, necessarily demand like a fee for posts or not be okay with affiliate. But they're not also too small. They don't have, you know, 1,000 followers or something like that to be little to no impact for your brand. So that's what I would put the nano influencer at. Then there's a micro influencer term also, which I put usually at around that 30K, 200K mark, is when they have like a significant follow. There's 30,000, that's like a stadium full of people that follow them. So that's where I would put like a micro influencer.
Okay, so you've described this the pyramid strategy, which is great, because I think anyone, even if they're not using Sorrel, they could go with spreadsheets, yeah, and UTMs or whatever. 100%. They could architect that. But how, because that's your strategy, how have you built Sorrel to really help like make that a lot easier to do? Like, how does Sorrel work in the context of the Illuminati pyramid?
Perfect question. I think and this is also a good time for me to self-reflect on our product, because I think we do the first two layers of the pyramid really, really well. We are working on features that will allow some of that more bespoke kind of custom, because again, that's not one feature. That's like 10 different things that brands could do at the top of the pyramid. But Sorrel as a product would really streamline your seeding. So you have, like, we have a discovery component where you can just find any influencer as long as they have a public account. So we don't have like a scraped database or anything like that. It's basically running a real-time search on TikTok or Instagram or YouTube. So you would search for creators, you would send them bulk outreach. That's one of the key pain points for seeding, is you just need to reach out to a large volume of people. If you're sending hundreds of outreaches or over DMs, it's going to take you 1 or 2 whole days to just send all those DMs out. Sorrel just automates that in two clicks. You're able to reach out to hundreds of people. And then we also have an inbox functionality where you're able to manage all of your conversations in one place. So it's not all spread out all over your actual inbox in your Gmail or your DM inbox. And then we have a CRM functionality or creator relationship management, I like to call it, where you can see all of your community members. Have they received product? Have they posted? We have social listening built in that actually listens when they post. If they haven't posted, you can set up an automation saying, hey, if the product is delivered, but they haven't posted and it has been 3 days, follow up with them with this message, things like that you're able to set up. So we're able to do a lot of the base of the pyramid, and we have our affiliate functionality built in. So you're able to, you don't need a second third party affiliate tool. You can just manage it directly in Sorrel. You can generate affiliate links, track when they are generating revenue, send payouts to them, send commissions, all of that. So the second layer for ambassador is also managed well. On the top, you have things like creator equity, and you know, things like UGC content and so on. We are enabling some of that UGC whitelisting and getting content usage rights and so on in Sorrel, and we'll eventually enable some of these other types of traditional paid deals also through Sorrel. So that's all in the works.
Nice. And then on the second and third tier, I feel like a lot of brands that I've talked to like to get these people into some kind of community as well, where they're able to either preview product or, you know, get their opinions on upcoming product or something. Is that something you've seen brands do, is take their loyal groups of ambassadors and higher ups offline into other communities?
100%. Usually, they would add them into either a WhatsApp group or Facebook or Discord, or sometimes even I know that Tabs, for example, has a Slack group with their creators. It depends. Some brands do it, some brands don't. It's as simple as you can also have a Klaviyo segment. So in Sorrel, you can set up a Klaviyo integration or a SendLane integration. It connects with your ESP. You're able to send all your influencers that you're working with, your entire community now is in Klaviyo. So you can send them newsletters, you can send them insider news about the brand, and they are all engaged. So that's more one to many. Versus if you really want, let's say, your top performing influencers in a group so they can collaborate, strategize, all of that. That's one way to do it. Some brands also just ditch the digital community and make it as much as we love digital, as much as I love talking to you on this Zoom recording, but then I think it makes sense more to shaking hands is different, right? So some brands also throw events for influencers if they're in a particular city and so on. So we've seen a lot of these, but definitely definitely do some version of it. If you can do right now, if you're small, you can just do like a group even on Instagram DMs. That's perfect. If you could throw an event, host an Airbnb, some sort of a, you know, mixer for influencers, definitely do that. So anything you could do to make your brand the excuse why a lot of people with similar mindsets get together, that's perfect.
I asked you in the pre-interview, I think I called Sorrel an influencer network and you corrected me. Why do you not consider Sorrel an influencer network, and why did you choose to build it broader on the open internet than a specific network or stable of influencers?
Yeah, I love talking about this. I think the network approach falls flat on its face, given that what's working right now is every brand needs to have this unique community, right? So back in the agency, I'll illustrate this with a story, right? We were working with a skincare brand, and they were like this minimal organic skincare brand, less products, don't apply too much product on your skin. That was their philosophy that they were going after. So we worked with the creator, and then she posted about the brand, was all good. And then 2 or 3 weeks later, because we were following that person on social media, and then they posted about a makeup company, and it was a sponsored post. So it was very incongruent. Obviously, there's nothing wrong being a makeup company, nothing wrong with being a minimal skincare company. It was just that incongruence of, hey, like putting a loads of makeup on your face is incongruent with minimal organic skincare, right? So when creators do that, it becomes a problem. And they tend to do that, especially when they're part of some sort of a network or a marketplace of influencers where brands can go on. There's a lot of these platforms where brands can go on, post a job for influencers to get hired for. And then a bunch of influencers apply, and then they pick and choose whom they want to work with, and they all create content for the brand. That is definitely easier than, you know, doing that, finding your own influencers and so on, if you're not used to the process. But what you will end up with a lot is a lot of inauthentic content that influencers keep posting for the sake of getting free product or getting paid by brands. And a lot of, by definition, any network is always going to be supply constrained because you're only going to have a set number of influencers for every category. If you have fitness influencers, but a vegan supplements brand is different from a CrossFit, you know, like pre-workout brand is different from like a carnivore snacks type of a company, right? So they're all in the fitness category, but the same fitness influencer won't work for all. The vegan supplements company needs like a vegan athlete. The CrossFit company needs a CrossFit athlete. The carnivore company needs somebody who talks about the carnivore diet and so on, right? So it's different. You need to create your own unique batch, your own unique community of influencers. And I think that network phenomenon just defeats that because you're always going to be constrained by the limits of the network. Versus with something like Seral, you're able to search across social media. So you can search for very specific keywords, like say hashtag CrossFit athlete, and find people who actually care about. You can also double it. So you can say, hey, who's posting about CrossFit and vegan? So you'll get, hey, who are CrossFit athletes that are also vegan? You're not going to find that level of granularity in a community. And that's the trusted partner that you need to promote your brand. So that's why we chose not to build a network, is because of that phenomenon.
And in a network, you'll get a limited, like you say, the supply side is constrained. You'll get a limited number of influencers promoting multiple products. So you're going to sacrifice authenticity if one day you're promoting a vegan thing and the next day you're promoting a carnivore snacks, obviously. I can see that being a problem.
And we've also seen some network, because again, think of it from the network's perspective. They have onboarded influencers on their network. Now it's kind of their job to get this influencer paid and get them more deals. So what we've also seen some networks do is they would actually promote other brands that are working. So for example, if an influencer does really well for this fitness brand one, they would promote that influencer to the other fitness brand. Like, hey, they're working really good for this brand. Why don't you collaborate with them, right? So now suddenly if an influencer does well for your brand, they're being promoted to other brands that are going to poach them from you. There's going to be someone who's going to pay more for them. It's going to give them a higher affiliate commission, whose product maybe is a little bit better or different or more suited to the influencer. And you're going to lose that relationship. So I think it's in the brand's best interest to build their own community of influencers. The makeup companies can build makeup influencers, the minimal skincare companies can get minimal skincare influencers, and everybody can have their own unique batch of, you know, 100 to 150 creators who constantly post about them. And that pretty much just solves for your marketing.
Love hot takes on the D2C podcast. And it's funny, most of the hot takes lately have been about the concept of UGC. So what's your hot take on the concept of UGC?
My hot take on the concept of UGC, I think, is that most modern content that brands are calling UGC is actually just AGC, or actor-generated content. I think it's again this network phenomenon of people hiring creators off of these UGC marketplaces and sending them free product and them talking about you. But it's very evident that that person does not necessarily care about your brand. You, as a brand, you're better off if you align with someone who's very, there's values alignment between them and the brand, where they actually use the product. And maybe the content is not as polished as what you would get otherwise in actor-generated content, but true user-generated content is supposed to be raw, is supposed to be authentic, is supposed to have a little bit of an ah or a or, you know, like a normal, let's just like how a normal person would talk. And that we've seen works way better, is also more economical because you can get content for cheaper this way than you would overpaying for something in like a UGC marketplace. So that's my UGC hot take, is most UGC sucks. It's actor generated content, and brands should focus on getting true authentic UGC by partnering with creators who are relevant to their brand.
And product seed, just the nature of product season, they're going to use the product. If the product is good, they're going to use the product, and then maybe they'll make content about it, as opposed to the other way, which is like, you're a content creator, you will make content, I'll send you a product, you'll make content about this. It's like, you just, user isn't even in that. So I understand you got to stick with the right acronyms, UGC, AGC, and then sometimes you get EGC, employee generated content. That is the other category of GC. The other topic we talk about all the time these days is top of funnel and what true top of funnel is. As coming, you know, we're a Meta agency at Pilot House, and so often we think of Meta as the top of funnel, but really that's just a full direct marketing channel that compresses the funnel. So it's pretty cool to think about influencers as true top of funnel, because they really are. That really is that awareness play where you're going to get generate top of awareness. Do you see what Sorrel does as top of funnel?
VC depends on what stage of the pyramid you're on. If you're on the base of the pyramid, then that's definitely top of funnel because you're seeding product, you're getting a lot of posts, it's going to build awareness, it's eventually going to get you sales, but it's definitely top of funnel. The ambassador / affiliate, the middle segment of it, is more, it's more direct response than otherwise, but it's still primarily, I would say, top of funnel awareness related, but you do end up getting conversions, and you can't really, you can't bring a, I have this conversation with one brand a week almost at this point, but you can't have a performance, because most brands, and complete empathy for them, they all come from a performance marketing background. If you scale to a certain level, very likely you did it on the backs of Meta ads, right? So they come from that performance ads background where they know that, hey, this particular ad got us this many sales, and if an ad does not perform for 5 days and we've exhausted this much budget behind it, let's turn it off because it's not working. And that works great for the performance marketing model because it's more direct response. Influencers, on the other hand, are not direct response. There's hardly ever, like, just ask yourself, when was the last time you saw one influencer post about one product one time and you made a purchase? Probably never. You've probably seen the product over and over again by a lot of influencers who posted about them. And then you potentially visited the website or Googled them, clicked on a Google ad and made the purchase. So the conversion actually gets tracked on your Google Ads campaign, but the demand was driven by that influencer. So you can't really bring that performance marketing mindset, because if you do, then you would think that all the influencers are useless and they're not doing anything. But if you're getting incremental conversions and higher revenue, that means that there is an impact. So I recommend brands track things like their blended CAC across channels, and I look at their awareness numbers and their follower growth on social media and things like that to measure influencers.
Can you give me, I know you don't have to mention a brand, but can you talk, what in your mind is like the most successful campaign? Outline what it looked like for a brand using Sorrel.
Sure. I think the most successful campaigns don't look that much like campaigns. Again, campaign is a word that comes from performance marketing. Like, you would run a campaign, you would test. The best campaign is a large community of influencers that's consistently posting about you. And for some of our largest brands, there are hundreds of influencers that post about them week on week, almost on a daily basis. They're getting 50, 60 pieces of content. This is some of our top brands, right? That is really awesome, because what you do get, it's almost like you're on every billboard in your city. It feels like you're everywhere, although you're not everywhere, because you're just in your city. You're just in that one subgroup of people who are talking about you, but it feels like you're everywhere for people who are part of that community, right? So that's, in my opinion, one of the best outcomes of influencer marketing, is if you can build a micro community of people, and by micro, I mean, even if it's 35 to 50 people who are talking about you consistently on a week-on-week basis, you've won at influencer marketing. Then you can scale that to hundreds of influencers. You can keep it at that. You can ascend those people to higher levels. But your marketing is basically solved for, because you just have this community that's constantly engaged and constantly posting about you. So I think that should be the goal that people have. But then in terms of results, there are brands that have, you know, made hundreds of thousands of dollars in a couple of months just using that ambassador segment. And usually we see that those revenue numbers are around 20 to 30% of the true impact in terms of sales that influencers would drive in terms of top of funnel. So it's been really fantastic, the type of results. There are brands that have different stages, right? So brands that have launched with influencers that have made, you know, $30,000 in the first day of launch because they had 25 influencers post about them at once on the same day. Everybody thought this is like the next big thing, and they purchased from the brand. So definitely some really great results that brands are seeing.
And then I saw this debated on Twitter the other day. It was people talking about, if you were just launching a new brand, would you run Facebook ads first, or would you launch a product seeding campaign first? Would you do them simultaneously? So what do you prescribe for brands starting out? Because I know you, for ads, like, you want to have some social proof. You want, you know, when you're running ads, it's going to make it a lot more effective if they're also seeing it from other influencers. How do you recommend brands starting out approach their budgets when it comes to things like Facebook ads versus influencers?
I think, I know that people expect me to say influencer marketing. That's what I do. But it depends on where your skill set is and what your product is. So if you're, I'd say, like, Eric, if you were to start a DTC brand, I would say, just run Facebook because you're good at that, right? Like, you just know how to nail it. So if you've done it before, if you're more comfortable with Facebook ads, definitely do Facebook ads. Just don't stick to it as a long-term strategy. Because when you start a brand, you want to see those sales, you want to get those initial results, you want that product feedback, you want to improve, you want to figure out if you even have product market fit, all of that. And Facebook is a really great way to start driving that traffic into your funnel and start seeing those conversion rates, start seeing the feedback, the reviews come in and all of that. Once you do that, then you have some breathing room to create your influencer program. But another way that I would recommend is do a pre-launch strategy with influencers. So what that entails is, let's say you're going to launch next month, start outreaching influencers this month and sending them free product, assuming you have inventory and everything. Start sending free product, say, hey, it's just for feedback. We aren't even live yet, so we genuinely don't want you to post, because like, even if you post, nobody can buy the product because it doesn't, literally does not exist. Some of our brands have done this. Influencers love this. Even some of the larger ones, like you could technically reach out to people with hundreds of thousands of followers and do this, because they think that, hey, this brand is really going to crush it because they're already thinking about influencers and they already need my feedback on the product. I'm going to give them feedback, and then if they actually give genuine good feedback to you, if they like the product, they will say that they want to post about it. Let them post about it when that launch is upcoming, right? So coordinate, but like I told you that example of the brand that made like around 30K on their launch day, coordinate influencers so that they all post during your launch day. So you get a large bump in your launch day sales. And then obviously keep running your Facebook ads to get that consistent volume. And then slowly, because if you rely completely on Facebook ads, you're building your home on somebody else's land. You're building a home on rented land. You don't own Facebook, but you do own your community. That's your community. No, that's like a moat around your brand. They can copy your product. They can't copy the hundreds of influencers that you have relationships with. So I would say, kick off with whatever you're comfortable with, try doing this pre-launch strategy, and eventually build this community of influencers that would promote you, because it's not one channel that matters, it's the full stack, right? You're going to get the influencers are going to generate content, which you're going to use on your Facebook to maximize the impact of your influencer efforts. Also, your ROAS on Facebook will increase because you use authentic UGC from influencers. So I see it all as like a elaborate marketing system of you know, getting customers. So I think you just have to be almost everywhere as a brand nowadays.
And with how much people are searching, you know, on Google, on TikTok, for your brand, you know, having all of this authentic organic content out there is going to provide that halo effect that actually improves the results across other platforms as well. So it's like, you got to be omnichannel.
100%. I agree.
Yash, thank you for coming on the D2C podcast today. If you guys want to know more about Sorrel, you got to go to getsorrel.com. And I think there's a special landing page, yes. getsorrel.com/champion/D2C/newsletter.
Correct. DDC-newsletter. Yes, we'll leave a link in the show notes, and
for sure,
we'd get a longer free trial. You'd get a custom onboarding handhold and all of that. So we'll take really, really good care of you. So if you want to start an influencer program, if you want to start building your pyramid and build your own Illuminati, just dropping that in again.
Nice.
Definitely check out Sorrel. Yes.
And I guess Sorrel is the eye that floats above the pyramid. Is that right?
Correct. Yes. It's not the eye. It's that circular logo of ours. So, you know, it's like,
oh, perfect.
That. Yeah.
Yeah. This is awesome. We in the pre-interview, we talked a little bit about cricket. I've got my first game this week, so I'll let you know how
Fantastic.
That goes.
Yeah. Eric, the only Canadian I know who plays cricket. Lovely.
That's right. I got to flex it. Thanks, brother. Good to chat.
Thanks so much for listening to today's episode. If you're not a subscriber to our newsletter, you can do that right now at directtoconsumer.co. I'm Eric Dick, and this has been the D2C Podcast. We'll see you next time.